And that's why IJKM are the same, they're the same numerical array. It's good practice to keep the index positions, but if you're in the Euclidean space, you don't need to raise and lower indices. If you're if it's Euclidean and Cartesian, you can put it all down or all up, and it doesn't matter. But it's easy to confuse yourself then if you try to, you know, use a different metric. So it's best to keep the positions right. Okay. Nathan's either very late or outright missing. Well. We'll,
I'll ask a question that's more colloquial,
sorry, but
all of the generalizations, like the curls, generalizes to which differential form, and on down the list there are a bunch of generalizations that differential forms allow. Could we just run through those and...
We've got a catalog. That's a good idea.
All right.
And maybe I'll do an example for you. Have you got the last problem set three on your machine here?
If you can pull it up, I'll do one.
All right. In three dimensions, we have. The gradient is grad f. We have the divergence, which you write del dot v. We have the curl del cross v. We have what else? The Laplacian. Is del squared of actually of anything. You can have the Laplacian of any. Let me just write the Laplacian of a function for now. Okay, so here in
is this what you were after?
Yeah, actually.
Okay, good. Then in n dimensions using forms. The gradient is just the exterior derivative. I think I may have a bad marker here. Yeah, that seems better. Just the exterior derivative of f. The divergence is... star the star of a one form. Let me write the one form as omega. So here, f is an element of lambda 0, omega is an element of lambda 1. So that'll give you the divergence. Let's see, so 1 goes to n minus 1 goes to n goes to a function. Yeah, that's right. For the curl, you just take d of a one form. So here again, omega is an element of lambda 1. So the curl is actually a two form. And in general, that's the best way to leave it. In three dimensions, you can take the dual of that and get the to make it a vector again. You can take the dual of it, and that's most useful in three dimensions. Then for the Laplacian, I forget which way the sine went. It was in, it's star d, and then there's a dimension-dependent sign somewhere. So it's plus or minus D star. Now on a function, this reduces to, this one is zero on a function. So this one gives the Laplacian of a function. So this would work acting on F. In general, we can let this act on a P form. So if we let omega be an element of lambda P, the signs here depend on you have to check your notes, I think. We worked it out, but I think this one came out positive. And then there's a relative sign here. This depends on the dimension and on T. In general. And there could be an overall sign here as well.
I have negative 1 to the end. Or no, star G, star G.
Okay,
then have a function between the two.
So out here we had minus 1 to the end.
Only for the first term.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
What was it here?
Plus
or
minus?
Plus.
Yeah.
Plus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So,
And it went back on W, yeah.
But we worked it out, right? This holds for a 1 form. Right, that's all we worked it out for. The signs here, let's just say signs, relative signs, depends on, yeah, okay. So you can have pluses or minuses, they're depending. You just If you need to know the Laplacian of a three form, you can work it through once and figure it out in a given dimension. And I invite you to find the general formula. But these are the standard operations and how they generalize. Let's do an example. Why don't you pick one there, Juan, from, you know, on a problem there where I gave that whole list out of Jackson. Just pick one that looks, you know, this we'd like to have done as an example.
That's right. Del dot, del cross, divergence of a curve.
Del dot.
And then del, or no, del cross. A vector, A,
or
something, yeah.
Or A.
Okay. Well, there's A, I
have it over there. Yeah, any old vector.
Right.
Okay, so we want to find another expression for that. Divergence of a curl. Okay, so, to translate it, you take a divergence of a curl. Well, the curl is going to be D of the one form A. And we're in three dimensions here, so it doesn't make sense to go ahead and make a vector out of it. So the curl part, I can write like that. Now I've got a one form. Now I know how to take this divergence of a one form. It's star D star. So I take star D star of that one form, and I get an identity.
Oh,
so
D,
this is,
you get a D squared. Okay.
Star, yeah. D star, star, D, A. Two stars is the identity, so I get star D, D, A. D squared is zero, so I get zero.
Okay, that one
is
okay.
There he is. Just producing a little summary here and doing... So you're getting an easy one.
Star is 1.
So we start. So we improved that that's the 0. Yeah. Star is 1. You know, we didn't. Did we prove that?
Star.
Yeah. Star of a P form. We certainly went through for
a dimension.
Yeah, and I gave it for a problem in three dimensions to do them all. Again, depending on your conventions, star could be minus 1, but it's, you know, it's either plus or minus 1.
Yeah, but you still pull it out.
You're still going to pull it out of there and get D squared. So this will still be 0.
Can we want it like lower or the more metric?
Well, okay, this is a contravariant vector. This is a covariant vector. Right? But this is the way I want you to do the problem. Keep it easy. You know, you don't try and translate back into a vector. You know, that's just going to be messy. I mean, you can if you want to practice working with the metric. It doesn't hurt to be able to do that. But, you know, I gave you a whole bunch of these identities. And what I, you know, write it all in forms. Just come up with the equivalent thing expressed just in the form. That would be easier. And then just use this table. So if you see, oh, del cross A, well, okay, translates this way or this way. In 3D, you'll use this. So if you see a curl in one of those formulas, boom, you do this. Oh, here's another one. The cross product. You have U cross V. Over here, we can write that as omega wedge eta. It's just a wedge product. Exactly. So here, omega and eta are elements of lambda 1. And you take the dual of omega wedge eta in 3D. Then the dot product, how would you do a dot product? If you wanted to find u dot v, how would you do it with 1? I can do it without a metric. I have 2 1 forms. I want to make a scalar out of them. In 3D. How would I do it in 3D?
What would it be like wedge and star? No, it would have to be like star and star.
Yeah. Here we have star after we wedge, right? We take the wedge product, then we take the star of that whole product. But look at what happens if I take star of omega first and then wedge it. What is that?
You have 3 forms.
Right.
You can start again.
Yeah. And now take the star of that.
Okay.
Shall we check? What do we get here? What we want is star omega wedge eta. Let's see. So star of our one form here is going to be, we have omega I G I J E J K L D X K wedge D X L 1 over 2 factorial because we've got a 2 form. And then we want to wedge that with eta m dx m.
Oh, wow.
Right? This is going to be right. Then we want the dual of all that. So we have 1 over 2 factorial. Let me pull out the coefficients here. Omega I G I J E J K L. And we have eta m. So all of that is the coefficient of dxk wedge dxl wedge dxm. Then I take the dual of that, so I'm going to have klm. I'm going to have 3 metrics here that simply raise the indices to klm. And it's a 0 form, so I'm done. But I ran out of space. Let's see. Now up here, then these 2 epsilons, I'm not taking any derivatives, so that just gives me EJKL E, whoops, that should be down. JKL EKLM. Alright, I'm summing on KL. This is going to be clearly delta mj, and then the coefficient, I need 6 factorial here, I get 3, so I need a 2. So my star of star omega wedge eta is equal to 1 over 2 factorial times 2 times Kronecker mj. Then I have a gij omega I eta m. And that's everything. And of course, this all works out really nicely, right? It's just g I j omega I eta j, the dot product. So exactly right, normalized right now.
Can you see it okay?
Question?
So we can do the dot product. Yes?
I'll do a really silly question, probably. So in our first step, we're just rewriting our one form, say omega, in terms of Eason and
this,
stuff.
Yeah,
here,
that's
this,
our
this,
omega.
This is the dual of omega.
Okay.
Star omega.
Okay.
All right, I'm thinking, okay, omega is just omega I dxi. Eta is just eta I dxi. Right, they're just one form to start with.
Okay.
But the dual of that one is all this junk.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks horrendous. Duals are sort of crunchy to mess with, okay? But, you know, it's the price you pay for working in any dimension you like and generalizing calculus there. You get better at it. It's not too hard to, you know, come up with these identities. And, in almost everything you do, you end up with a pair of epsilons and end up replacing it by Kronecker's, and then that's very simple. In fact, you usually take enough duals to make that happen. When you're trying to solve equations,
you do that on purpose.
You do it on purpose, yeah. You just throw in another dual just because it'll make the number of stars even, and you know you won't have epsilon hanging around. Do you need another example? Is this enough to go on? Any preference? Any question?
This is a pretty good example. I need to catch up writing it down, though.
Okay. If you want more practice, you know, there are, I think there are some other identities in the front of it. Oh, yeah. If you want to work in a coordinate system, in the back inside cover of Jackson, he gives all of these operations, the curl grad, div, and Laplacian, in Cartesian, polar, and spherical coordinates. You could try and derive those formulas. That's a very good exercise. It's, you know, more work than I wanted to absolutely require of you, but it really would be good to pick a couple of those formulas and try and work them out. So, you know, give it a go, see if you can get them. In order to do that, you will need to pay careful attention to coordinate versus orthonormal basis, right, to write those formulas and get them to come out like what Jackson's got. That's an orthonormal basis in the back of Jack. So, yeah, try, you know, at least try a simple one. Like, polar coordinates is pretty easy. If you really want to challenge, do the spherical. You want to challenge, hang up. Okay. Any other questions on form? If you want more examples, I'm thinking to starting Lie groups. As soon as you guys run out of questions here.
Can I ask a repeat or something?
Absolutely, yeah, sure. What do you want?
I just wanted to go over once again. Yesterday, you're on the board briefly at the beginning of class, and you with all the indices up, one over the square root of the metric times the epsilon.
Yes. Where that comes from?
Right.
Okay, let's take a look at that carefully. All right, we have the tensor used to buy one through IM. And we know that that is the square root of absolute value of the determinant of the metric times epsilon I1 through IN, where epsilon I1 through IN is just plus or minus 1 from 0. That's purely anti-symmetric array. Now, we like to raise the indices on that to get, let's say, J1 through JN. And to do that, there's a tensor. So we're going to put I1, J1 through G, IN, JN on the epsilon down, or on the E down, sorry. Like this. And now we write this out as, let's pull out the root absolute value G. And then we have G, I1, J1 through G, IN, JN on E, epsilon now, I1 through IN. This object is proportional to the determinant of the matrix. The determinant of that matrix. That matrix is the inverse metric. Let's see. You know, I might have had some notes last term about this in our relativity. I think I talked about how you could get a determinant with an epsilon. You know, this is the determinant of a matrix, right? If I've got M, 1i through MNJ, I've got an N by N matrix, and I put 1i through J, that is the determinant of MIJ. It's the determinant of that matrix. You can see you're doing this diagonal rule or submatrix rule. It's just all anti-symmetrization. You know, this is the nice symbol for it. Notice I've fixed the first index on each M, and I'm summing the second one here. All right, if I leave those first ones very variable, so I have like I1, J1, sort of like I've got over here, up to IN, JN, epsilon, J1, through JN. Then, what I have now, notice it's anti-symmetric on I1 through IN. So, there's only one anti-symmetric thing in N indices up to a multiple, so this is some function times epsilon I1 through IN. Well, also, if I pick the indices, then I'm back to this equation. So I pick I1 to be 1, I2 to be 2. So then this becomes 1 if I choose those. And then this all becomes the determinant of M. So in general, I can write M I1 J1 through M IN JN epsilon J1 through JN is equal to det M times an epsilon up like this. Okay, so I can do that here. Alright, this is equal to root determinant G. Then this is the determinant of G inverse, because the indices are up, that's an inverse G, times an epsilon I1 through IN. And the determinant of the inverse of G is 1 over the determinant of G. So I can write this as absolute value, 1 over determinant of, that's just G. Um, with an epsilon, and we get the formula.
Okay.
This I can write as that square root squared.
Right.
So this becomes 1 over the square root of s to the value g, epsilon I1 through I n. So there's our formula.
It's better to just work through it carefully. Stop me if I get rolling too fast on anything. You've probably seen this happen before. Okay. What's next? Another question? Or groups?
Anything you're still struggling with differential forms, I'm happy to try to clarify. Won't be your last chance for questions. I'm sure you'll come up with some stuff as you work through these problems. I guess this is the point where I'm now ready to look at your problem. So finish up the problems on differential forms. What did I say? Thursday, Friday on this?
Friday a little bit.
Okay. So, and what is it? It's three sets of problems. That's getting you there. Okay, so the first three problem sets are due Friday. Okay, so here goes.
I'm kind of excited to get into the algebra.
It is. It's very cool stuff. Everybody got that? You still?
No, I'm done.
You're okay. All right. So, creeping erasers. Definition, a group is a set, what should we call it? Let's go with S, it's a nice name for a set. Together, the name for the operation is just totally arbitrary. You like plus or times or circle plus or circle dot or circle times or, you know, it's just a binary operation.
Sure. Have you been using circle times?
Probably, yeah.
So start.
I'll call it circle times, but, you know, bear in mind it's just as often an addition-like thing as it is a multiplication-type thing. It's just a binary operation. So, times takes S cross S, you know, the direct product of these two, into S. And that actually covers closure. Such that, and now since we've got closure just because it's always into S here, that's what closure means. What do we need? We need first an identity. Yeah, there exists an element E in F such that E times A equals A times E equals A for all A in F. Okay, so it does what an identity does. You know what an identity does? There's a way to say it. Okay, second. What's the next property?
Associativity.
Oh, that's one. I usually save associativity for last. That's the third one. Once you've got an identity, you can define inverses. But you've got it, right? Inverse and associative, and that is the group. So, for all A in F, there exists we're going to name it a inverse in F, such that A inverse times A equals A times A inverse equals the identity. Can't define inverse without the identity. Okay, and finally, it's associative. For all A, B, C in F, A times the product of B and C is the same as the product of A and B times C. So this is identity, inverse, and associativity. Let's write down some examples.
Closure,
I put it in the preface.
Oh, okay.
Usually when I presented this, I said four properties, and closure is one of them. We could call that the fourth property if we want. Or really,
just got to be closed under that operation, right?
Yeah. All right, so by a binary operation, I'm defining something that takes two elements of F and gives you a third element of F. So closure means that the product of any two elements is another element of F, so this is the closure. Okay, let's start building examples. All right. Let's take a group to be S in times, where let's let S be the set consisting of one element. Let's call it the object A. This might be a group. We'll see.
A looks at A.
So take A times A to be A, because it has to be, because that's the only thing it can be. It's a very short multiplication table.
So it's closed.
It's closed. A is the identity. A is A inverse, because A times itself gives itself. It's associative, because what else could it do? It's always going to give you A. So, group. It's a group. Yeah. So clearly, A times A
equals
A times A times A, and that's the only case to check. So the things in parentheses become A, and then we just have A times A, and so both sides are going to give us A, and A is equal to A. So we got one there. Let's try a bigger set.
Can you have a countable, a non-infinite countable set that is a group other than 1 and 2?
A non-infinite countable set. You mean a finite set?
Or a finite set, yeah. That is a group?
A finite group? Yeah, there are a lot of finite groups.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll generate a bunch of examples.
I guess multiplication, I guess, is a better way to see more.
Yeah. Now, it's common practice when you're working with groups to omit the operation sign and just write things next to each other to indicate the product. So, A times B, we're just going to write as A times B, where the group product is understood to be what we're doing here. So this is some element of that. So let's try another example. Let S equal, let's have two elements. All right? So we need a multiplication table. So we need to know what happens if we multiply A times A times B, and B times B. So as long as we can fill in this table, we're good. Well, one of these two's got to be the identity. So we know right away, could be either one. Let's call it A. let A be the identity. And now we draw it as this. And now we know what E times everything is. We get E and B when we multiply by E and B. When we multiply B times B, we get B. And so, you know, that's the column, that's the row. So there's only one stray thing we haven't worked out. That's what is B times B. What does it have to be?
So it has to be D.
It certainly has to be either E or B. Which one and why?
Well, it depends if B is zero. It could be B or...
Oh, who said anything about a zero?
There is
a zero. It's a product. There doesn't have to be a real number model for this. Usually there is. There certainly is for this, but there doesn't have to be. Right? We can just define the product, but what's missing? All right, we have the identity. Does everything have an inverse? Yeah, right.
Yeah, you need an inverse.
What's the inverse of B? If it's going to be anything, it's got to be D.
Yeah.
So that, in order for this word to work, that lower corner has to be E, if it works. So what we're saying is E gives itself... So E acts as the identity. You know, everything is looking good here. Is B, E is equal to B. And B times B, so B is its own inverse. 1 minus 1 act that way. 0 act that way under addition. This is okay. But the thing we have to check is associativity. And that's usually a pain to check. But let's do it in this case, at least. So if we have E... times E times E, clearly that's the same as E times E times E. In fact, I think if any of these things is E, it becomes pretty easy. If I put a B there, that's going to be B times E, which is B. If I look at it the other way, E times B times E, that's got to be E, this is B, is equal to B. So far, so good. If I put B in any position, everything's going to... If it's got one B in it, it's got to be B. If it's got two Bs in it, suppose we do B, E, B. All right, that's B, B is E. If we do B, E, B, that's B, B is E. Can we put them any other way? B, B with E, that's going to be E. If I take the B, E the other way, that's going to be B. Looks to me like anything like that. What happens if we take three B's? This is going to be B, E is B. If I take them this way, that's an E, so I get E, B is B.
Right.
And, that's enough. That's enough cases. You can just see that it's working. checking associativity is really tedious for finite groups, so, we'll only do a limited amount of that. You really have to check everything. So, if you've got an n element group, you've got n times n times n things to check here. Each group two different ways. So you've got n cubed times two different multiplications to check whether they equal outright. That goes up really fast. So, for for a three element group, you know, what are we going to have to do? We're going to have to check, you know, 27 things. For a four element group, 64, and, you know, it just gets unwieldy. Fortunately, we very quickly get to matrix groups, and we know that matrix multiplication is associative because we can prove it with indices, and, you know, it's just an immediate proof, and we're good. It reduces to ordinary multiplication of reals, which, by definition, is associative. So, we'll be good. So, we'll say it's associative, so it is a group. Not a graph, but a group. Let's try. Drop is what?
Harry Potter.
Yeah. I think there was a W in that. I suppose you could spell it G-R-O-P. You know,
G-R-A-W-P.
Grop probably would have spelled it Grop. Yeah. Nice character, actually.
Let's see. So let S be a three-element set. We've got an identity and two other elements. Let's see if we can make a group. So, E, A, B, E, A, B. Then we need E, A, B. The identity always gives the things. So, now what happens? We could have, everything has to have an identity.
An inverse. Yeah. So, there, you know, E can't be the inverse to anything but itself. So there are two possibilities. Either A inverse is A or A inverse is B. You know, one of those two cases. Let's just check them both and see if we can build a group. So try A inverse equals A. Then our table becomes EAB. EAB. We have EAB, AB. Then A times A is going to be E.
B times B is going to be E.
B times B is going to be E. Prove it.
Because A can only be inverse to itself, therefore B, as long as B is different, then B inverse can be.
Okay. So, how do we know that B inverse can't be A?
Because A inverse, that would mean that you have, that would be,
you'd have to, something wouldn't work.
But
yeah.
I think you'd
be lying about how big your set was.
Right, yeah, I think it
would. Yeah, A would equal B.
If you have more than one identity, both have the same identity, you know, so.
Yeah, but let's try a proof. So, if we try B inverse equals A, then we have B A is equal to E, is equal to A is its own inverse. Now I can multiply on the right by A inverse, so B A inverse equals A inverse. It's associative, so I can group it this way, and that becomes A. It's associative here, this just becomes B, and B equals A, and my group only really has two elements, not three. So, by assumption, the elements of the set are distinct. So B is not equal to A inverse. So this is right. B has to be its own inverse if A is its own inverse. Now, what goes here? Yeah, okay. If we try and put E here, then A times B, B is A inverse.
Right.
So it's not,
right,
so this is not E.
It has to be the same across the diagonal too, or else you're not going to have the added to the
It would be the same here. But let's just keep working on this. Let's try A. If we have A, then this says that A times B equals A. The problem with that is if I multiply by A inverse and use associativity, I get B is the identity.
So that first...
Right. Everybody see it? Multiply on the right by A inverse and you get this.
Right.
So, no, it can't be that. So, Let's try B, but that'll give us A times B equals B, and that tells us that A is the identity. That's not allowed. So, no group.
I mean, you can have A group if you go to A.
All right, there's nothing we can put here that works. And this gives us our first hint about how to do these tables in general. Have you got this board?
Yeah.
Good? The problem can be seen to be it turns out that it's very easy to show there's a problem with having the same thing twice in the same row. So if I've got a group multiplication table and I've got, you know, A and B and C here, and I get D in the same place. So A times D equals D equals A times C. Then I multiply by A inverse, and I get D equals C.
Yeah.
So I cannot have the same element occur twice in the same row.
For column.
Same is true for columns. Yeah. So each column, right, it's an n by n array for the multiplication table, so each column and each row have to contain each element exactly once. You can't have the same element twice. You have to have an element so each one occurs exactly once. So each element occurs exactly once in each row and each column. So there is no three-element group. Let's press on. So far, Jake's conjecture is holding on. He suggested that there were no finite groups other than one and two-element groups. So far, it's true. Those are the only two we found. But it's going to break down here.
Break it down for 9-2.
Yeah. Yeah, there are lots.
I've done too many Sudokus.
Yeah, there are...
I'll think about some. Yeah. I think maybe everybody would. Is it going to be the perfect squares?
What's that?
Is it going to be the perfect squares? Because you got 1, 2, 4, and 9 for sure.
Oh, let's see. Why does 9 work, I wonder? Well...
Would it be the perfect squares? Is that what you have?
Perfect squares. No, there are more than that, I think. Let me see. I am not actually sure what works about. You know, I've written the ones up to six or so. You start getting lots of groups at a given level. We're going to find two groups of order four. Okay, let's get these and, you know, let's.
Is there a group?
I'm sure there's a systematic treatment of it. But I don't know the answer to the question exactly. What sizes for S work? For starters, let's do four. Yeah, maybe we'll gain some insight into it. I think, you know, you can probably. Okay, you know, here's. There's a thing called a product group. Okay, so if I have a group of order P and a group of order Q, I can construct from them a group of order PQ. By just taking formal products, I can do that. So, you know, it's not a simple group, it's composed of two groups, but so for a lot of compound numbers, I'm going to be able to construct groups. So, for example, what's the first thing? Okay, 2 times 3, but we can't do 3.
Two times one, two times four.
Yeah, we need some odd dimensional groups, I guess. But, okay, we have a two-dimensional group, so every even number, because I can take two times two. Let's see. Yeah, and then that gives me four, so I can take two times four and get a six. I can take two times the six and get an eight. So I can get every even number. Probably not very interesting groups, but those are... by the way, yeah, this is the Boolean algebra here. You know, you can think of this as times with
zero.
Times with plus or minus one. So we get one and one and minus one and minus one. Or you can think of it as addition mod two. And 0, 1, 0, 1, 0. Addition mod 2 does it. Modular groups. Or groups. Wasn't a dumb way to name them after all. So, let's see what we've got. EABC. EABC. C. C.
There's a mod 3.
What's that?
But there is such things among three.
Yeah, so what's going on there? Did we miss something?
If you, BA, yeah, BA might work. BBA. BA.
Addition mod three, yeah.
Yeah.
Did something go wrong with our proof here?
BBA. And at some point you have to have the same thing. No,
we didn't finish this. That's the problem.
Yeah. We did the first case.
Yeah, we only did the first case, where A is its own inverse.
Right.
So, we try...
No, because the other one...
There's the problem. A inverse equals B. That'll give us a group. Okay, so... Yeah, I was worrying about that in the back of my head,
no,
too.
No, I don't think it will.
EAB. Well, let's try. So, EAB. AB.
Oh, wait,
then,
that's why.
E and B are inverses to one another.
So, E's go across, yeah.
So, now we've proved we have to have E here and A there.
Yeah.
And that worked.
Okay. Yeah, that worked.
That's a group.
I was going to say, because there is a mod 3. Why is it?
Yeah. So, mod 3. Addition mod 3 will satisfy that.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, now with three we can get pretty much anything.
Yeah, it might just be so here is one of each.
Yeah, you can get a group of any not dimension, but yeah.
Okay. So in that one we have B squared is B and B squared is A.
Right.
But A is the inverse of B.
Oh, did I do it? Did I draw that wrong? No, A, B is E. Yeah, A and B are inverse to one another.
Okay.
But A squared is B and B squared is A. That's right.
I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that for some reason. It doesn't have to be numbers. Indeed, it's defined this way. This is
Think of this as addition mod 3. So the set is the numbers 0, 1, and 2 under addition mod 3. So, 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2. I add 0 to any of those, I get 0, 1, 2. I add 1 to any of those, I get 1, 2. 2 plus 1 is 3, mod 3 is back to 0. Then 2 plus 0 is 2, 2 plus 1 is 3, mod 3 goes back to 0. 2 plus 2 is 4, mod 3 is 1. And there's our table.
Okay. I have never seen the long thing. Before.
Modular addition. It's just, it's
counting in a different.
Think of it as numbers around the circle. You know, mod 7, you'd have 0, 1,
well,
2,
right.
3, 4, 5, 6. So I take a number, say 2, and I add 3 to it. I go 1, 2, 3, so 2 plus 3 is 5. But if I'm adding 5 and 6, I come around to 5, and now I add 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's 4. Because you subtract a multiple of 7 each time. You know, every time you pass 0, it's equivalent to just subtracting some multiple of 7. So addition mod 7 means,
A plus in a different space.
B mod.
Yeah, knocking off the,
mod T is defined as A plus B minus some integer times T, where N is chosen so that
A plus B is less
than A plus B mod T is an element of the set of numbers from 0 up to p minus 1. So you can always find some n that does it, right, that puts you back into that set. So this is addition modulo p. It's a simple group for a p, prime. Okay, if p is not prime, you can decompose it as a product group. I'm pretty sure that these things decompose that way. Have you looked at these?
Okay, we use lots of them in the combinatorial part of the matrix theory class.
Yeah.
There's tons of mods, but no...
There are a few theorems you
don't delve into too much.
Okay.
Probably have the theorems written down on it somewhere, but...
Yeah. Well, you could try it, you know, try addition mod 6 and see if you can write it as some combination of mod 2 and mod 3. I'll bet that worked. We can try that. Let's figure how to do this. What can go where? I could have either B or C here. I can't have A. Oh well, I could have E, couldn't I? E, B, or C. So suddenly I have three possibilities for what goes there. But here's something to observe about this. I could have A inverse equal to A, or A inverse equal to B, or A inverse equal to C. If A is its own inverse, then B inverse has to be either B or C, and C inverse is whatever's left. If A inverse is B, then B inverse has to be A. That means C inverse is C. Exactly. You see where we're going here. In this case, one of them has to be its own inverse. Okay. Let me finish the proof. This means C inverse is equal to A, and that means that B inverse, it can't be either C or A. It's got to be itself. So, in each possible case, one element is its own inverse. So, we might as well choose that element to be A. Since we're naming him arbitrarily anyway. That leaves us with two possibilities here. Okay, I could have BC here or CB, but I can't have two B's in a row, so this has to be CB. And this has to be CB down here. So now we have two possibilities. Either B is its own inverse and C is its own inverse, or they're inverses of each other. So we're going to get two possible. Let me write them both out and we can look at them at the same time. So we have E here, CB, and CB here. And so we could take everything to be its own inverse, and then we have to have A there and there to fit our little theorem.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, how you doing?
Fine. Can I ask you for a second?
Yeah.
I'm
sorry. Yeah, sure, sure. Excuse me.
I'm so sorry.
I'll be right back.
So that's pretty easy to finish. Just throw the E's off to the side and see where you need to put things. They're both A's.
Her husband is a great cook. I think that's like some lentil soup, but the spice thing he does on it is mash what he does on it.
Alright.
Okay. So, otherwise we get E's here, and it then has to be A's there. So far we have no conflict with, everything's got an inverse, we've got uniqueness, so we haven't run into the problems we've perceived. It turns out both of these are groups, and I invite you to check associativity. There are two groups of order four.
Doesn't this construct have associativity built into it? Seems like it would. I guess no. Once you got above this, it probably might not.
Yeah, these are both associative.
Right.
But they're also both abelian. What's abelian mean?
Commutative.
Yeah. Okay. So look at all the groups we've got so far. They're all abelian. Right. How do you tell? The multiplication table is symmetric across the diagonal.
Right.
So the transpose of that matrix, so the transpose of that matrix gives itself. So this is A times B, then B times A is right across the aisle from it. So you can see, just looking at the table, so far every group we've written is abelian. Let's try five and see if we can get away from that. Let's see how far we have to go before we get something non-abelian. If you look at addition mod n, right, you can do this for any n. Therefore, there's a group of every finite size.
Right.
Right. So there's a proof of the theorem you were proposing, or well, it's the.
It's proven conjecture.
We've disproven your conjecture, but we've proven a theorem that gives a nice answer to the general question you raised.
Right.
Okay. So, let's keep going until we find something non-abelian. Because there are non-abelian groups. And, you can play with these all you want. Actually, if you've got a nice computer, you might be able to get up higher than we're going to get on the board. I don't know. Would a computer help? You might write a little program that, lets you hump through these things.
Writing the program would give you some insight.
Yeah, it would. So let's try five elements. What happens with the Quigley group? We already have. Addition mod 5. And the multiplication table from that will be 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And what happens here...
Mods are abelian, right?
What's that?
Mods are all abelian, right?
Well, that's what I was wondering. Are they?
I'm pretty sure because it's just an addition. It's just...
So you go up one here each time. So these rows just cycle. 2, 3, 4, 0, 1.
Yeah, it's
3, 4... 0, 1, 2, and 4, 0, 1, 2, 3. So, that's abelian.
The proof is because the addition is abelian.
Addition.
Oh, of course.
Therefore,
so, proof means...
Yeah, so the modular groups are all abelian. So, we still have no example of a non-abelian group. Okay, so I forget how high we have to go to get one. Let's keep trying. I mean, the only interesting groups are non-abelian, really. I shouldn't quite say that. Seven
sure.
is a good bet for something funky to happen.
For sure, I'm almost positive won't be, but I could be proven wrong.
So let's try B, C, D, E, A, B, C, D. And fill in the identity.
Okay.
now, let's see. We can choose.
Okay, so say we were to swap the last two rows on the fifth one.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't that still satisfy not having any two repeating elements, but wouldn't it make it non-abelian at the same time? Because you'd have...
Oh, good idea.
You'd have a two and a two on the diagonal, and you'd have a three and a one.
So we...
Yeah.
Right, this
those.
Is 3, 4, 0, 1, 2.
No, it doesn't preserve your identity.
One.
Your identity of 0 is now no longer preserved.
What's that?
0 is no longer the identity. Because 0, 0, 4, 0, 3, 4. Your identity has to be preserved through the whole thing. You have to have an identity, and there's no identity in there.
Yeah, 0 is the identity.
Right.
I see what you're saying. Right.
1 times 4 is 0.
Yeah, so 0 fails to be the identity here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's the problem. Well, what if we... that doesn't work either.
Doesn't work either.
No, not going to work. I think it's determined from there, because we have to have 3, 4 here. So, let's see, what could happen? You know, these two have to be 4 and 0, so that's got to be 0 and that's got to be 4. These two have to be 0 and 1, so that's got to be the 1, that's got to be the 0. So we're locked in after the third row, for sure. Good try, though.
Worth a shot.
1, 2, 3. So it takes something a little more. Let's try shuffling the inverses around. So let A and B be inverses of one another. Let me just give myself some guidelines here. And let's let D and C be inverses of one another. Or maybe we should make them their own inverses. Shall we try that?
I mean, you know, there are going to be several possibilities here, in all likelihood.
I mean, there certainly is this one. What's inverse to what here? Everything's the inverse of something different here.
Inverse is cycle on those. It's just diagonal. It cycles through. It's
sure. Yeah. Got to be. Because,
that's actually a proof we did, now that I think about it.
Yeah. So, Q and P minus Q are always inverse to one another. So the identities will always be spoken back like that. So Q and whatever you have to add to Q to get to 7 or 5 or whatever it is. Okay, so let's see. So we need to put B, C, and D in this row. What happens if we? I'm just gonna guess some stuff here. Pick one of the possibilities. D, A, C. We can put. What was it? B. Yeah, there. So let's try that.
You're almost locked in.
Am I yet?
Not quite. I think choice you can make.
Yeah, what can go here? All right, we want to get non-abelian, so let's see if we can make this something other than B. Well, it can't be C. Can't be D.
It can't be, because it can't be Elizer by one.
It has to be B, doesn't it?
Yeah,
that one has to be B. This one has to be C. So the abelian character is forced here. Now what's going to happen?
From here on, it's definitely.
Let's see. So this is A. We need A and D here. So that's got to be A. That's got to be D. What do we need here? We need A and C somewhere. That's got to be A. That's got to be C. What do we need? D and A. That's got to be A. That's got to be D.
A.
Two, and what are we down to here? This is, what are we missing? B?
We got one.
No, we have two B's. What happened? That didn't work.
So it's got to be a D.
Oh. But we got a D here.
That doesn't have to be a B.
Yeah, it has to be a B this way, but it's got to be a D that way.
You've got A and D there.
That doesn't work.
A and D here. Yeah, it doesn't work.
This would have to be A. Oh, right. All right, so we're no good down here. Let's try it. If we put the E's the other way, does it work? So now we need D. No, that doesn't work. Can't do it.
Stuck.
So I guess too many things, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Or there isn't any, but we know of one, so we got... You can't tell, even though we've got E's here and the identities are down there, you could have the rows interchanged. I mean, this could be 2, and that could be 1, and that could be 4 and 3. You know, if you've interchanged the names, it's the same group, but the table looks a little different. So, anyway, we've guessed too much here. Let's back up. We could probably put B and A like that. Then this has a subgroup, because that's a group right there. Then here we'd have to have D and C, but now we're in trouble. We'd also have to have C and D, so we can't do that. So we've got to put C or D back here. Isn't this where we got in trouble?
DD.
This has to be... Yeah, this is where we were. So, not getting anything.
Well, C would have to be C on that one.
Then this has to be C and A, so that's got to be A and C. That doesn't work. Wait a minute. All right. No good.
I don't think you can create it that way. I think you have to have two E's on the diagonal.
Okay. So let's go with the E's on the diagonal. That's different than this. You know, these are not their own inverses. So let me just draw this again and put E's on the diagonal and see what happens. Let's try C and D and B, just to pick something random. Do we know what goes here?
Well, this is going to work for sure one way, because we can just always cycle it through. That'll work.
So let's see. So that would be a C, probably. Then here we need, what do we need? A and D. No, that can't be a C.
Okay.
This has to be A, C, or D. So A's got to be over here. So this has to be either C or D. Did we try C?
We did. Try D.
So try D. That's going to be bad, too. So we need A, C over here. So it's got to be A, C like that. All right, so here, this has got to be BC, so it's got to be BC. This has to be A and D, so it's got to be BA. Here, all that's left is A. Here, we need B. Hey,
single word. Okay, and it's not abelian.
Yeah, not abelian.
Mm.
Okay, is it associative? Homework.
But this is not necessarily mean it's associated that it fits into this.
I've never seen a proof of that. We've got a consistent multiplication table here. So we have something with inverses. Let's try associativity for, you know, let's do a case. So if we take...
You have to do one of the non-abelian cases.
A times B times C. A times B is C. So we get CC, and C with C is D. If we take A with D with C, okay, B times C is A, so we get AA is D. Okay, so that one worked. You know, check the other, let's see, what did we say? 5 cubed is 125. Check the other 124 and we got it. But I don't know. You know, it may always work. I've never written down a case where it didn't work. I've never seen a proof that it does. It's probably some known thing. There are lots of results on finite groups. That's the whole area of study. I would bet that we've got a group here. So we've got two of order 5 at least. There aren't too many, but the number of groups of a given order does go up as you go to bigger and bigger matrices. Right? You saw here that once we filled in that, you know, sort of that upper left corner, the rest was determined. Well, you add another row and column to this, and then that upper 3x3 probably won't quite determine everything. You'll still have some choices. And we certainly were not systematic about this and looking at all the possible ways we could write things in. Although I think we were pretty close. There were only a few things we could try in this corner, and we tried 3 or 4 of them, and only one worked. So, you know, we're in the neighborhood of exhausting the possible order 5 groups. So, let's see, we have the modular groups. I don't know, you want to try and prove results in modular groups? Let's look at the product group. Are you all headed out of town for the weekend and want to get out of here? Anybody?
I just say something. Might not be cool.
What's that?
I'm just trying the ones I think might. There are two that I thought might be bad. One is TDD.
Yeah, check it out. See if you can find anything that goes funky. Suppose we have T1 is the pair S1 and some kind of product, and G2 is that S2, and let's use something a little bolder for that product.
This one is not a group.
What? You found one that failed?
Yeah.
What do you have?
TDD.
TDD? So TDD is C, because everything's its own inverse. CD is, okay, C times D is A, which is not, A times D is B. So it's not associative. So it's not a group. Yeah. Okay. And that resolves the
question.
Filling the table in does not guarantee associativity. Which means we still don't have an example of a non-abelian group.
Yeah,
of course.
No, it's not a group. It's not a group.
Does that mean we have to push the 6?
Were you just doing this?
We'll give a try to some bigger ones. See, the great search for non-abelian groups.
I want to say the first one's going to be 7, but I don't want to try and make that diagram.
Let's look at the pair S1. Take the union of the set, and let's take the direct product. So we're going to look at pairs. So here let's take A, B, C elements of S1 and X, Y, Z and things like that, elements of S2. Okay, beginning and end of the alphabet. Unless you want Greek or something. So we have things like A and X, and our product, let's call it circle plus, just to have some symbol, B and Y, we can define to be A times B paired with X cross Y. So we've got a product. Let's see if we can prove that it's a group. If it actually is, we probably can. So, is it easy or not?
Are you allowed to do Cartesian products?
That's what it is. It's a Cartesian product.
Cartesian product.
What I'm conjecturing here is that it's possible to take the Cartesian product of two groups and define the product to be in this way and to get another group.
Yeah.
So
that should be a group, Cartesian product.
You got to prove it. You know, easy to prove it. We got properties, which is good. So if we take, we need an identity. There's an identity in each. So let's say E1 here and E2 there are the identities in the two groups respectively. And if I multiply that, my group product is circle plus, times any element AX, that's defined. This is going to work, right? Because it's just defined using the two group product, E1 times A and E2 circle cross X. And that's the identity within G1, that's the identity within G2, so this just gives me AX, and it's pretty clear this is going to work.
Well,
everybody see it? The inverse. So I'm on an inverse to AX.
Okay.
I conjecture it's A inverse X inverse. If we look at the product with AX, we're just getting these properties for free. We have A inverse dot A. We have X inverse circle cross X, and that is E1, E2. Clearly, we could do it in the other order, and it would be just fine. Associativity? Let's see. It probably induces from associativity. We have AX plus BY plus CZ. And that's going to be, we have A times B and X circle cross Y circle plus CZ. And that is A dot B quantity dot C for the first, and X circle cross Y quantity circle cross Z in the second. Those are associative. Each of these individual products is associative. That's the same as A times B dot C. This is the same as X circle cross quantity Y circle cross Z. And now we just undo the step. That's equal to AX circle plus BC B dot C, B dot C, Y cross Z, and that is A comma X circle plus quantity of the product of these two, B Y circle plus C Z. And we proved dissociativity of the product group. So given any two groups, we can define a group made up of ordered pairs where one element is one, is the Cartesian product of the original two. So how many elements do we have? If G1 has C elements and G2 has Q elements, then the number of ordered pairs, we can put P things here, we can put Q things there, so there are P times Q elements in this product set, in that Cartesian product set. So we have a way to construct bigger groups, given smaller groups. And the groups that can be constructed this way are generally regarded as less interesting than the ones that can't. So what you want are simple groups, groups that can't be built up in some way from other groups by taking products or if we discover other ways of coming up with new groups. Let's see. Do I know of another way to do this? Yeah, this is probably good enough. Let's look at the cyclic group of order 6. I think that gives an example of it. Let's see if we can write it as a product.
Oh, and after looking online, the first abelian group is of order 6.
Ah, the first non-abelian?
Non-abelian, right.
Oh, man. Actually, Dave feels like cheating. look it up on the web. Quick, Google it. So, okay, so there's an exercise for you. Find all groups of order 6. There can't be more than, 3 or 4. I don't know how many there are. Find all the groups of order 6. An example of a product group. Let's look at addition mod 6. Okay, so the multiplication table, we have 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We just know how to do the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 3, 4, 5, 6, 0.
What's 7? What did I do? 1. This is, you got 6
instead
of 6.
Yeah,
6s are 0. Oh. 6s should be 0. And that 0 should be 1.
That's better. 0, 0, 1, 6. 0, 1, 2, 5, 0, 1, 2, 3. And 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so there's the multiplication table for addition mod 6. So our set is the set of digits 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the operation is addition mod 6. Now, let's look at addition mod 2 times addition mod 3. So S1 is going to be addition mod 2, so we get this set. S2 is going to be addition mod 3, so we have 0, 1, and 2. And so plus mod 2 and plus mod 3, so this is G1, G2. So let's let G equal G1. What did I call it? Cross. It's a Cartesian product. So we can write it this way. So the elements. What are the elements? We have 0 with 0, 0 with 1, 0 with 2, and we have 1 with 0, 1 with 1, and 1 with 2. So there are 6 elements in the group. Those are the possible elements. The identity surely is 0, 0. So if I put 0, 0 here and 0, 0 there, what corresponds to 1, I wonder? Can we intuit it?
Well, if you...
I bet on one of these. Let's take the identity here and imagine cycling that. There's a little bit of guesswork here. We could probably reason this out. But then, clearly this is going to be 0, 1. What's 0, 1 times 0, 1? That's going to be 02. Right, because it's just addition in each position. So 0 plus 0 is 0, 1 plus 1 is 2, mod 3, but we're okay so far. So if this really does correspond to 1, then 1 plus 1 is going to be 2, and let's try this one for the next position. So the identity does its thing. Then 0, 1 plus 0, 2, that goes to what? The identity. Right? Because 1 plus 2 is 3, so these two are inverse to one another. That's not what we wanted, right? We want our identities, our inverses to fall along this line. So
to shift over 2, doesn't it?
What's that?
So in order for that line, we're on the...
We want the...
Over 1, 2, so we need 2 things before we put the 2s in there.
Yeah. All right, so let's not do this yet. There's a very important problem that we're facing right now. This should work. And if it does, we've found two ways of writing the same group. We've already seen an example of that with the Boolean group. Right? We had the group E-A-E-A-E-A-E-A-E. We saw that under multiplication, we could write 1 and minus 1, and that gives 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1. We can also do addition mod 2 with 0 and 1. Then we get 0, 1, 1, 0. That's three different ways of writing the same group. You know, I don't think any of you really want to argue that those are different multiplication tables in any real sense. It's just a renaming of the elements. Now, I could write them in a different order. You know, it would still be the same intrinsic object. There is such a thing as an abstract group. You know, the set and the product. Well, you don't quite know what that means. But then there are representations of a group. A representation of a group is some particular set of symbols that, you know, we know how to combine them, and the combining rule automatically gives us a way of writing that group and its elements and its product. The thing you have to preserve is the group product. This is the idea of the homomorphism between two groups. Two groups are homomorphic if there's a product-preserving map between the set. And it constitutes, essentially, a renaming of the elements of the group. Well, what we're faced with here is, you know, we've got this group. We could write its multiplication table very easily. The thing is, we'd like to write it in a way so that it matches up with this, so we explicitly see that there is a homomorphism here, if there is. And I think there probably is, but it's a little bit of guesswork to actually see how to choose these to match. So establishing that two groups are the same is, you know, sometimes tricky business. Sometimes it's very easy. Here it's trivial. But we're often interested in. Whether two groups are homeomorphic, homomorphic, isomorphic. There are so many morphisms. They're all sort of the same thing. I think homomorphic allows many to one mapping. So they're not exactly the same group, but they're related. Yeah, Jay?
Two groups are the same up to a permutation, a point permutation at least, which means you change both the top and the side. Then you can permute such that your identities are all in the right places and they'll be the same group.
Oh, right, yeah. So we could just write this any way we like and then interchange. That's the same group. Yeah, I was just trying to get it right the first time without having to permute, but we don't have to do that. Let's see, the next thing I should write here, I don't know what it is.
I think it's 1, 0, actually.
Let's try it. That's the next thing I was going to guess, so this has got to be 1, 0. Yeah? Yeah?
Oh, I was thinking maybe it would be easier if we approached it and found the elements that were the identity first. So we have...
Well, we know zero is the identity, but what's inverse to what? That's exactly what I mean. What's the inverse to this?
There is no inverse to 1, 2.
What?
Well, what's the inverse to 1, 2? 2, 1. There is no 2, 1. No, I'm thinking mod 3 on both. Never mind.
Yeah, 1, 1.
Yeah.
Okay. This is 1, 2 inverse. Is that right?
He's using the same model on everything.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So let's see the inverse to this. You know, we need that's its own inverse, right? Is that right? Yeah, that's its own inverse. Is anything its own inverse? Yeah. That's got to be
the 3.
Yeah. 3 is its own inverse. So. The next one over is this one. There we go. So let's drop down 1, 1, 0. So here, let's see, it's going to be about here. We get 0, 0, 1, 0. So that one's its own inverse. We know where that one goes.
And the last two have to be inverses.
They are.
Let's see. We've got three more to write. Let's see, the inverse to this one has to be, like, way over there somewhere. And we got 1, 0 here. And we know what goes here. 0, 1 with 0, 1, that's going to be 1, 1. So, wait a minute, where'd it go? Here. Add these two, I get 1, 1. Okay, so what's 1, 1? Let's see, that's 4. So 1, 1 goes up here and down here. Oh, this is it. So 1, 1 times itself is 0, 2. And 1, 0, 1, 1 is going to be 0, 1. And here we get 0, 1. Oh, yes, okay. So 0, 1 with that is going to be 1, 2. And here we get 1, 1. And let's see, what else down here I can fill in? 1, 1. And then here we get 1, 2. Good. Getting there. Now, 0, 2 is... The next one down is back to 2. So we want 0, 2 here. So now let's fill in this. This is going to be 0, 2. What?
That's
no.
0, 0.
That's 0, 0. Oops. What? That suggests that it should go where?
0, 2 should go on the outside, or 1, it should go where 1, 1 is.
No,
past 1, 1. 0, 2 is the next one after 1, 1, by that.
Yeah, alright, let's try. Why did that go funky on it? This is right, isn't it? 1 plus 1 is 0, 1 plus 1 is 2. So,
sure.
0, 2,
4 plus 4 is...
Oh, this is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 plus 4 is 2. So
this is not... They are not equivalent.
Maybe they're not. Or maybe there's another... Let's see. I don't
see... There's a different way of writing it.
I don't see where we... All right, so let's go ahead and figure out what we get. So if we stick 0, 2 here,
just because... What happens? So we get 0, 2. This gives us 0, 0.
This gives us 1, 2. This gives us 1, 0. going down here, we get 0, 2. We get 0, 0. Yeah, that should be the outermost one. Then here we get 1, 2, and 1, 0. And 0, 2 with 0, 2 gives, or that's 0, what is it? 0, 1. Yeah. Okay. Then let's see. So what's left to put here? 0, 1, we 0, 2. Then we 2. See. Oh, it's 1, 2. That's all that's left, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we get 1, 2. Then here we get 1, 0. And here we get 0, 1. Here we get 0, 2.
There you get 0, 0.
0, 0. That's good. Okay. 1, 1. And 1, 2. 1, 0. 0, 2. This should be 0, 0. And finally, 1.
And they are not equivalent.
So what's the identities are all in the right place. What went weird? So let's see, these aren't cycling. Oh, you know they're almost cycling though. You know, if you look at where this one tracks to, it's jumping over by 2 instead of 1.
Oh.
Where does it get to here? 0, 1, here, and here.
So, that's why. Weird.
So, I wonder. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, here it is. No, so, where did we expect it to go?
Expected it to go.
Let's see. Well, what's its inverse? Let's see, 0, 1, the inverse is 0, 1, where'd it go? Way over there.
Oh,
0, it's 0, 2.
It's close to what you have, because you notice those should be the 1s, and they should be on the diagonal, but you flip. So they should be diagonal from, I guess, top right to bottom left, the ones we have underlined. Does that make sense? Because they correspond to 1 in the other, the other diagonal.
Yeah, we so like these to be going the other way. We want this one.
Oh, yes, in number 4.
We want this one next. We want 0, 2 up here.
But that's going to move your identity.
Yeah.
So that means that they are not equivalent officially.
Yeah, they don't. Doesn't look like they're equivalent.
Well, but it's not like completely randomized.
No, it's not. Which means that there might be a different operation. I think the sub operation is the problem, not the main operation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You can find G1 and G2 such that, but it's not T2 plus and T3 plus. It's got to be something else.
Well, if it's a Cartesian product, the order has to factor, and the only factors of 6 are 1 and 6 or 2 and 3. So it's going to have to be an order 2 group times an order 3 group, and we've only found one of each. So it would have to be a 3. So
two.
If it is a product, it's got to be this one, I think.
Wouldn't 3-2 give you a difference? No, it wouldn't.
No, not really.
Then, yeah, it's got to be a different addition. It can't be addition to make it.
Yeah.
What's the order if you move? Just a kind of a ridiculous question. Wouldn't like the order 1 group times the order 6 group just be kind of like a trivial case?
Yeah.
Because you're always going to end up with the identity in like the first place, and then.
Yeah, that one dimensional group is like nothing.
Yeah, it's pointless.
Yeah.
Well, you could do.
Would that work? Would you go, you'd have to have element be 1, element 0, or no.
This really does not seem... Oh, but now, wait a minute. Suppose we did flip this up here, but we're still free to shuffle these three rows. So, what we need to do is reorder all of these elements.
Anytime you do that, you got to do every permutation on these things. It has to be a point permutation, otherwise you don't preserve your identity. So you have to both switch top and side.
Yeah, of course. So... if we do that...
Point permutations will move your identities.
So we want to write 02 here. Are we sure this goes wrong?
Yeah, because then you're going to move your identity, and it's no longer going to be along the diagonal.
Yeah, except we don't know where the identity is yet. Right. We're moving this... Oh, the identity is already there.
We set it up for the identity for the diagonal.
Yeah, right. Right. So is 01 in the right position?
The top two are right, the middle two are right, but 1, 2 and 02 are flipped, which makes me think that's where our problem is in 1, 2 and 02. The identity to 1, 2 is 01.
First
one.
I'm just thinking that you've probably got an even and an odd subgroup here. The sum of two evens is even, the sum of two odds is odd. And so I'm wondering if we wrote the cyclic group as 0, 2, 4, 1, 3, 5. 0, 2, 4, 1, 3, 5. This does have a subgroup, right? So 0, 2, 4, then 2, 4. 2 and 2 is 4. 4 and 2 is 0. 2 and 4 is 0, and 4 and 4 is 2. So we actually have a subgroup like that. I just wonder that. That's a three-element group. That's got to be the same as RG2. Let's see. What happens if we continue here? 2, 1 is 3. 5, 7 gives 1. And 1, 4 is 5. Then we get 1, and 9 becomes 3. No inverse there. Now here, if we write this way, that's also a subgroup. Same one, got to be the same one. And let's see, is that 4, 4, 4. That becomes 0, 0, and then 0, 1. So those two corners do match. Now, if I put the remaining ones out here, what happens? So now I want 1, 0, 1, 1, and 1, 2. What happens here? I get 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 2. Now I get 1, 1, 1, 2, and 1, 0. Then here 1, 2, 1, 0, 0, 1. Oh, sorry, 1, 1. So those are the three remaining elements.
That
then
is good.
3, 3. Those match. This is diagonal, so that looks good. It's abelian, so it's all but the last corner, right? This has got to be that flip. So let's check this corner. Here we get 2, 4, 0, then here we get 4, 0, 8 becomes 2, and then this is 0, and 2, and 10 becomes 4. Let's see what happens down here. So this has got to be 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 2. So then here we're going to have 0, 0. No.
I remember it being a theorem that if you can't do it by 14 permutations, something like this is not equivalent. We did a theorem.
Well, yeah, sure, that's true, but it's hard to see whether you can permute these. You know, we can shift one row and get something in the right position, but something else is wrong.
But if you're in the same position,
you're not listening.
Yeah.
Then you can shift another row and column. That's going to change. It might change what looks wrong in the first one you shifted, right? So, you know, if I shift this 0, 2 here, but then I later do another shift of a row and column, it's going to shuffle those lower elements of the 0, 2 column. So it's not always obvious that you can. It doesn't look like you can. You know, it's not working. But, you know, you shift one at a time, but by the time you shift, you know, several rows and columns, it can look pretty unrecognizable.
I think because we did, like, in one of the class, the matrix theory class, I think we actually did a proof where you proved that it doesn't matter how you shift it. You can make it totally randomized, but see, as you go, you're going to get this one in the right order, and then you're going to get that one in the right order, but that's going to shift this one, and then you'll never get it through to the actual group that's original. So if you can, I forget what it was, but I think it's right. Difficult to
identify. This convinces me, because, you know, we've got the whole top half of the table matched, and that determines the rest of the table, but the rest of the table's not working. You know, this is going to have, let's see, what do we get here?
Actually,
1, 1, that's going to be 0, 2. All right, so the identities are going to go here. Yeah, one. Yeah, those are inverse to one another. Then that's going to be 0, 1 down there. No, that's not right. 2. Wait a minute.
1, 2 plus 1, 2 is 1, 0, 4.
What is it?
0, 1.
0, 1. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, we're supposed to be getting these again. Yeah, so, 0, 1. That'll be 0, 1. And then, 0, 2. 0, 2. So
they're shuffled.
Now, if we interchange the last two, would it muck this up? You know, that's the only thing I can think of. That, okay, so if we interchange these two, it would
hit those.
No, those would be on the diagonal. That doesn't do it. All right, so different groups.
I think actually part of the proof is we did upper lower did the cross-hatch decomposition, and then we did something else to prove it, but it was through this actual method that we proved that. I think it looks really familiar as you go through this. I was like, wait a second, because we started with this, and then we said that if you only have identities or zeros on these specific places, you can decompose it such that you can draw all the zeros in the top and bottom corners of a of submatrices, and then you take that and you say that the top corner can always be matched, and then the sides are determined, and that determines the bottom corner, and that actual determining of the bottom corner states that this one cannot be determined the same as this one.
Yeah,
I think that's actually how we went through the proof.
Explicitly. Yeah.
Is it going through?
Yeah. I mean, we're certainly seeing the techniques here. You develop systematic ways of laying these things out and ordering your elements. You can draw a conclusion. It gets tricky. But there's an extensive theory of finite groups. And, you know, go read about it. It's cool stuff. Actually, finite groups are useful for crystallography. You know, some areas of physics use them. You know, where you have reflection. In fact, okay, here's the permutation group. Interchanging elements. There's some powerful theorem about permutation. That can you get any finite group? Any group has a multiplication table, so you can get any finite group by some appropriate permutations of your multiplication table. So if you have the right permutation group, I think you can get every other finite group from it. Maybe one of you will get interested and look up a few theorems on finite groups. I'm sure there are a lot.
Bring in my commentary on matrix theory book and find this proof.
Okay.
It was kind of.
So if you guys want to present some proofs on finite matrices, that'd be cool. We can take a look at that. The groups we want to get to, probably is a good spot to break. The interesting ones are ones with infinite numbers of elements. Not just countably infinite, but infinitely infinite. uncountably infinite. not quite that big, but... Aleph infinity, let's see. The simplest example is rotations in a plane. Okay, rotations in a plane form a group. Each group element is labeled by an angle theta. And theta can take any value between 0 and 2 pi. Well, there are uncountably many of those. So compared to what we're looking at here, that's a vastly huge group. And yet it's, a very simple-minded physical group. The groups we're going to be interested in are groups like that, where you can label the groups with some set of real numbers. So you've got several real parameters, and you guys will appreciate that what that is a map to Rn. So if you've got n real parameters, it's like a coordinate chart of a manifold. A Lie group is a group that is also a manifold. The only additional condition you need being that the group multiplication has to be continuous. All right, so if I multiply two rotations by theta 1 and theta 2, and I wiggle theta 1 a little bit, the product of the rotations should wiggle only a little bit. So the group product changes smoothly as I smoothly change the parameters. If we have that condition together with a group which is also a manifold, that's a Lie group. Now, what that means is we can apply techniques of manifolds and tangent planes and all sorts of stuff like that to our analysis of these continuous groups, what are called Lie groups, L-I-E, after Sophus Lie. These are the ones that describe the symmetries in physics. And so we'll spend a bunch of time thinking about those. And you can, anticipate and salivate over the long weekend the eagerness to find out just how we do it. So let's leave it there, except for questions.
Are changes in three-dimensional space abelian? Or not abelian?
Non-abelian. Let's give an example. we need an example of a non-abelian group. here we go. All right, I've got a book. I rotate it in the. So let's call this x. Let's call this x and this y and that z. So if I rotate it around the z-axis. And then around the x-axis, I get this configuration. If I rotate it around the x-axis and then the z-axis, I get a different configuration. right, is a non-abelian group, right? It does not commute. Nonetheless, it's very easy to show that rotations form a group. Any two rotations can be gotten to by some third rotation. It's closed. I rotate one way, I can unrotate just minus the angle. I can represent a rotation by a matrix, and matrix multiplication is associative, so we've got rotations form groups. And that's going to be true in any dimension, so we've just found a whole lot of B groups. We'll find a bunch more.
Are the groups non-abelian?
Most of them. I mean, there are some boring ones that are abelian.
Okay.
Translation groups are abelian. Right. So translations in n dimensions, you've got an n-dimensional abelian group, and it's really dull.
I think it's very dull. Maybe if you're in curse space, that's really true.
Well, you don't usually have group actions on a curved space unless you have a symmetry. It's got to be a very symmetric manifold to have symmetry. In fact, you can show that every Lie group, Lie groups are manifolds. The manifolds are always parallelizable and probably constant curvature. I would guess.
Right.
Because they look pretty much the same at every point. You have a lot of homogeneity in a Lie group. So, you can move the identity to any point just by multiplying by some element. Multiply every element of the group by some fixed element, and you've just moved the identity to that point, and for the inverse of that point or something. And now everything looks the same, but all the points are renamed. So I think they're all homogeneous spaces in that sense. We can try and prove that. I'm not sure what the exact spaces will be, but they're all very nice manifolds in some sense like that. Go home, play, have fun, be careful. Or, as my good friend in Billing says to her somewhat rambunctious 20-something-year-old who can't take advice without just fuming. She says, when he's driving off somewhere, drive fast, take lots of chances. Okay. I'll see you next week. Have a good long weekend.
How we did that, because I remember that theorem almost exactly. I still remember it.
It's got a lot to do with matrices, but they're very special matrices. It's like Diophantine matrices or something.
The pretty part is it only involves point permutations, which are legal in this realm.
Yeah.
The proof was all about permutations and what you could do with them.
Uh-huh.
And